the mindset of a good teacher is there's always more for me to know.
Wow, that is, yes, a big yes.
You know, I don't think I've ever had anyone agree with me as much as you do.
Well, but you know, I think teachers need to be students of learning.
Absolutely.
Whether you're on the floor for 20 years, 30, or 50 years in the classroom, you've got to be continually learning. Welcome to the Teacher Rockstar Podcast, the podcast that's dedicated to providing valuable insights, practical tips, and proven strategies to equip new teachers for success. I'm your host, Steve Hiles, educator, published author, and instructional coach. Join me in each episode as we offer a supportive platform for navigating the challenges of the teaching profession. In today's episode, we are going to be discussing the science of playing math games for practice in the elementary classroom with our guest, Kim Sutton. But before we get into today's topic, I'd like to take a moment to share a little bit about today's special guest. Kim Sutton is a fabulous presenter who has taught thousands of teachers the joy and excitement of hands-on math. Kim's teaching experience includes over 40 years of classroom teaching, time as a regional math specialist, and as a university instructor. Kim has worked with over 500 districts nationally and internationally as a staff development consultant. A former associate director of Project Ames, Kim has a master's degree in mathematics education and has been the keynote speaker for state and regional math conferences. Kim has produced many wonderful math games and tools and has written many articles about pattern blocks and classroom management. Kim is the author of 18 titles, as well as the creator of the 10-block schedule for Math Fact Fluency program for grades K through 6. Welcome to the Teacher Rockstar Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Hiles. And in today's episode, we're going to be talking about the science of playing math games for practice in the elementary classroom with our very own guest here, Kim Sutton. Welcome to the show, Kim.
Oh, thank you, Steve. I'm so excited to be with you again.
Absolutely. Would you like to take a moment to tell our audience a little bit about yourself, what you do?
Yes, my name is Kim Sutton, and I've been in education. As soon as I say this number, Steve, it always sends shivers through me, but this is technically year 49 for me.
Wow.
Now, you can do the math because I started teaching when I was 20. So I got my first job in a district in Northern California. It is a district I'd student taught in and was lucky enough to land a job in a time where there was an excess of teachers, not like today, but there was an excess of teachers. And bottom line, I landed this job and it was for a grade level I had no experience at because I had student taught for fifth grade and my job was for second grade. So the learning curve for me was pretty steep. I've always been a passionate mathematician. That has been always the thing I loved. And I tried to share that passion with elementary students. Now, I have to tell you, there was a lot of learning along this journey. And when I talk to new teachers, my comment about it always is that journey, you have to be open to learning new things.
Yeah.
And bottom line, I've learned a lot. Taught a variety of grade levels in the midst of things. And the other day I recognized this might have been a mistake, but I got a master's degree in mathematics education. And that was interpreted by my district. Let's move her up. Let's move her up. Let's move her up. And I've taught a lot of different grade levels because of that. But my heart is in elementary for the simple reason that it's very difficult with middle school and secondary students to change a mindset about it. And they really have to have a good foundation in elementary. I also served as our county office curriculum specialist for math And so I was in a lot of schools. Luckily for me, it seems like when I look back on it, that I was in the right place at the right time for a couple of different reasons. One being that I got selected to train with Marilyn Burns.
Wow.
And yeah, boy, what a decade that was. And then I also worked with Dr. Lola May for 24 years. So I feel like I was just surrounded by this mathematical power from women in the field with messages. And so that has evolved in my life. And I have to say, I've learned so much in these years that it's been a real blessing. I look back and I think, was I the luckiest woman on the planet when it comes to being in education because of all that wisdom and power around me? Mm-hmm. And now I work with school districts on best practice in mathematics. And summer's always my busiest time of year because I'm on the road and I'm doing workshops. And I learn through those workshops and I continue to go in classrooms and work with children. So I love to have my finger on the pulse of all that's going on. And I'll share a little bit about that when we talk about the games. Mm-hmm. But my journey has been just filled with curiosity and joy towards the job that we have to do, and even surviving a pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Knowing that out of that, there's some very powerful messages that we need to share with students.
Yeah. You know, Kim, that is incredible. 49 years.
Do the math. There is a big birthday coming, Steve.
Oh, wow. Well, Kim, to kick things off, could you explain how playing in math games, okay, aligns with the principles of cognitive development in young learners?
I'd be happy to do that. When I think about games and children, I know, and I'm gonna draw a parallel to my other passion. My other passion is I have always been a basketball coach. And I think of teaching and coaching as really parallel practices, but I think that a child develops the cognitive reasoning for mathematics through a lot of extensive practice.
Yeah.
So the way I look at games is games are the practice of mathematics. Now, just to be current, all of my players want to be like two people right now on this planet. One of them is Caitlin Clark, that amazing young woman and her abilities. And the other one, quite frankly, and I think this is regional, but I'll use it, is Steph Curry. And they all want to be like that. But the bottom line is they don't realize sometimes the amount of practice it takes to get good.
Yeah.
So I remember reading a book. Oh, my God. I love this book. It's called Practice Perfect.
Yeah.
And it talks about the fact that we have to keep practicing to get good at anything. So when we're talking about developing students, the concept of games is so multifaceted because they're not only practicing math skills, but, and this is from my heart, Steve, children need socialization.
Yes.
Developed. And honestly, my biggest heartbreak after COVID was watching what was lost. And I'm not a person who thinks negatively.
Yeah.
But honestly, I watched children who lacked coping skills. They lacked the ability because oftentimes during COVID, they might have been playing games, but they were playing on a screen in isolation.
Yeah.
So when we talk about this, it's so much more than just cognitive development. It's all the other pieces to it. And I feel strongly that if we can get the message across to teachers that games do not have to be complicated, they can be extremely simple things And I think that is an amazing gift to give students. I also think when I think back on my career, I remember my first principal, Gary Camp. And I hope he listens to your podcast, but he was such a good principal in so many ways. But after my first year, I go in and he hands me a stack of books to read over the summer. And they were about student engagement, how to keep the motivation high. And I was like, well, aren't I doing that? And bottom line is, I had the content piece. Uh-huh. And that's a really powerful thing. But what I was lacking was how to engage students.
Yeah.
So I think I talked about this in our previous podcast, the power of four-letter words with students. And my list of four-letter words that I use is pretty simple. The word game, mm-hmm. dice, food, race, and song. So in my strategies, I loved Gary for giving me the stack of books, but some of the books, when I read them, quite honestly, I was reading and thinking, when was the last time this person ever worked with children? And when I reflected that summer, I reflected on the fact that I would say those four-letter words to children, and I got instant attention. It was like watching my dog when I offer her a treat. It was like, whoa, you know? And then I realized, oh my God, that's the magic, is being able to motivate them with simplicity. Mm-hmm. So when I say those words, I think it's funny because I call a lot of things games with children. Mm-hmm. When you might think as an adult, well, that's not a game. But if you call it a game with children, they think it's a game.
Absolutely.
And that's a pretty powerful piece to a teacher's success.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, Kim, how do math games contribute to the development of, let's say, number sense and mathematical fluency?
Are you a teacher who finds yourself drowning in the challenges of classroom management? Do student behaviors leave you feeling overwhelmed and drained at the end of each day? Picture this, a classroom where your students are not just present, but fully engaged, focused, and eager to learn. Say goodbye to classroom management stress and hello to success. The Teacher Rockstar Academy course is meticulously designed to equip you with the tools and strategies needed to skyrocket your effectiveness as a teacher. Curious to know if the Teacher Rockstar Academy course is the missing piece in your teaching journey? If you're ready to reclaim control of your classroom and witness the incredible impact on your students, then use the link in the podcast description to learn more about this program.
Oh, I love that question, Steve. Here's the thing. There's three areas to developing strong number sense with children. And I talk about this in my workshops, and then I give examples of it. So I'm going to do the same thing with you. Area number one is how we record quantity. So when we're talking about strengthening number sense, children have to be aware of technically what is called place value. And we primarily teach place value in short little spurts. Oh, that's right. I'm a little embarrassed to say this, but maybe I'm not. We go through pages in a math book. But the bottom line is place value is a huge concept. And so one of the ways that I develop games around place value is a tool that I use with students called a place value pocket. And I actually have the masters for that on my website in my freebies, which my website is just creativemathematics.com. Students develop a whole number place value pocket, and then they have sets of digit cards. So it's not a worksheet. So I'm going to make that comment multiple times today. Not about worksheets. It's about giving them opportunities to share what they understand. So for example, I might give students a place value pocket that they construct in class. And again, I know that you, the audience, can't see what I'm holding up, but it's a tool where there's a pocket for each place. There are digit cards, and then I give clues about a number. So it's like playing a game called Mystery Number. I might say to them, 3/4 of the digits are odd. I might give the clue the numbers between 5,000 and 8,000. All of that is so different than a worksheet. They think it's a game. Now, do I know it's successful? Yes, because they'll come in and go, hey, Miss Sutton, we haven't done a place value clue yet. We do one, and you're like, okay, this is mathematical power. Because as I give the clues, they're getting more and more practice with number properties. Mm-hmm. The second area to developing strong number sense is how we manipulate quantity. And that's the four operations. So I want students to know what addition means through two models, what subtraction means through two models, multiplication and division through two models each. And then, again, we practice that. So when we talk about these areas, I'm going to share some simple games for all of it. The third area is how we compare quantities. And if we think about elementary children, those comparisons are less than, equal to, greater than. So for example, I'm just going to share some of what I would call, let's see, I don't know, I went to see the Eagles do their concert on the greatest hits. Here's the thing. These are the greatest hits of my games, and they're simple. So please understand, it's not about complexity. One of my most simple games, and this is something that you can do just on the fly. So if you realize children need these opportunities, bottom line is you take a piece of paper or a whiteboard or a response board, and I always model those in my classroom. You draw two line segments on that tool, and then you use those comparisons. Less than, equal to, greater than. And then you give them a benchmark number. So the benchmark number would be something like, and I'm going to start easy and then I'll develop the thinking here. I might say less than 6 equals 6, greater than 6. And then I'm going to say roll your dice. And I use dice with children. I use double dice. I use dodecahedron double dice. I use dodecahedron double dice, and I use place value dice. And bottom line is, if it's less than 6, equals 6, greater than 6, we roll and we sort our equations. So if I roll two regular dice and I roll a 2 and a 3, the child would think 2 plus 3 equals 5. That is less than 6. They would write that whole equation in that category. Here's the thing. They're just rolling dice and they're practicing. Now, could I have made that practice on a worksheet? Of course I could. But bottom line, they think this is so fun. And remember, you're in control of what you want them to compare around. I'll take two dice with upper graders. One is the numerator, one is the denominator. Now my board looks different. It's less than one whole, equals one whole, greater than one whole. So they're rolling a fraction. All of that becomes practice. And that's, I have hundreds of those games where I'm playing off that theme of less than, equal to, greater than. That is a powerful way for them to practice number sense. And again, your imagination right now, as you listen to this, new teachers, is, okay, I could use any operation with that game. They're still practicing their facts, but they're sorting around a reference point. So for me, I think there is power in playing off of that concept with students. That's just a simple example. Now, could I change from dice to dominoes? Yeah, because again, in my world, and that's where you are today, that idea of dice, oh wait, dominoes, not a four-letter word, but children are highly motivated. It just gives them that over and over practice. I think it's funny. And if you haven't taught a long time, you won't realize this, but children will think the same game that we're playing, but this time we're playing with dominoes, they think it's a different game just because I changed the tool. And I'm not trying to deceive them, but I just want them to have that experience of practice. Because I think often, and I said this before, to the analogy of basketball, we practice skills over and over, not to fill the practice time, but to create what's called automaticity. That automaticity is a part of mathematics. Man, I'm long-winded today, Steve.
Oh, I'll tell you, it's oh my gosh, it's awesome. Well, let me ask you this, Kim. You know, when you're incorporating game-based learning, we realize it can be a challenge for teachers, yep, and especially new teachers. So,
absolutely,
what strategies can educators use to seamlessly integrate game-based learning?
Well, this goes into, and I love the help that you're providing new teachers. And a lot of that is classroom management. Mm-hmm. And when I talk about mathematics, I talk about a daily diet of mathematics. So I'm going to use an analogy to the four food groups. So there are four areas when we're planning our instructional block for math. And these are really important to remember. Mm-hmm. And to me, this could be a podcast in and of itself, because I think sometimes we didn't have good modeling of that math block. So I'm going to go at this. I'll provide just some quick bullet points. I don't want to overstay my welcome here, but here's the thing. In a daily balanced diet of mathematics, the current research says that children need between 80 and 90 minutes a day on math. Now, I say that at workshops sometimes, and people's faces go, oh, what?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
But bottom line is, you can't learn everything there is to learn in 20 minutes mathematically.
Right.
And so when you think about that, none of us would even dispute that when we were talking about reading language arts. But when we talk math, people get a little bit leery of that. Mm-hmm. But let's think about what makes up a balanced diet. So four food groups, mm-hmm, think in that mindset. I call the glass of milk focus activities. Focus activities are 3 to 5 minute activities that reinforce skills you've taught. So in other words, that would be that constant review. Sometimes it's a quick game. I'll play a game called the angle game, and it's literally 20 seconds with children, where I'll just say, show me a right angle. And what I want them to do is to move their arms and show me a right angle. Show me an acute angle. Show me an obtuse angle. That would be something quick. People overthink this. They go, oh my God, I have to plan for that too. No, think about what you've taught and then build a structure around what you need to reinforce. It's not particularly that challenging.
Okay.
I start my day with something called the big three if I'm teaching primary, or the big five when I'm teaching upper grades. Those are just questions that I ask them from previous concepts that I've taught. The second component is 10 to 15 minutes mm-hmm. on math fact fluency. And when I say that, people go, oh, you're talking about drilling them. Well, I call it drills to thrill as opposed to drills that kill.
Yeah.
And on my website, in my freebies, I have a list of computational strategies that you follow with students for 10 days of practice on each one of those. That's a huge piece. In that piece are going to be games to practice facts. The third component, and I call this the meat or the tofu, if you would, of the math program. And this is where children learn new content. It can be delivered in small groups or it can be delivered in a large group setting. Mm-hmm. But this is where you're teaching new concepts.
Okay.
So then when we go to the fourth area, this is the small group experience. And I incorporate a lot of games within my small groups. So in other words, those games are to practice areas of mathematics. So there's opportunities for games, both in focus activities, in fact fluency, in those small groups. But that's a huge mindset that a teacher can create about that chunk of time. Because sometimes new teachers will think about that time and they'll go, oh God, I got a plan for 80 to 90 minutes. No, think about what they need mm-hmm. and then think about it as the diet of mathematics and then choose a structure. Now, I just provided a structure. Mm-hmm. That's how I get those games incorporated. But also, I know that they're getting a balanced diet of mathematics.
Okay.
And I think that that's a simple way to think about that. But it's a powerful one.
Yeah. Piggybacking off that question, Kim, where would mental math, like if you did maybe 3-4 minutes of mental math, where would, what component, well, obviously, what component would that fit in? Would that?
I usually do mental math as a part of focus set. And then I can also fit it in, depending on what I'm asking them mentally for math, I can fit it in fact fluency. Yeah, it depends on the question. Like sometimes I will use a hundreds chart with children. They think this is the most fun game because I'll have kids call this finger twister. And what I'll do is they have their hundreds chart and I'll say, okay, put your finger on a dozen. And I'm watching. I want to know if they know what a dozen is mathematically. Okay, they're touching that 12. Then I'll say, add 22 to that. Well, if you've worked on a hundreds chart, you know the movement straight down is plus 10. So I'll see children, instead of going doot, 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 doot for 22 moves, I'll see them do 2 10s and 2 1s. Now, I'll practice my mental math with that over and over. At some point, I will play the song Pomp and Circumstance so they know they've graduated to another level. And I'll say, we're going to do mental math, but today we're going to do it without the hundreds chart. And so what they have in their mind's eye is that picture. So they think that's a game because, again, it's not a worksheet. It's using a tool that they have over and over.
Okay. Well, can you speak to, you know, different students have, as you know, different, you know, varied learning styles, obviously, you know, and how can teachers choose or adapt these math games to diverse needs, you know?
So, that is such a good question, Steve, because honestly, that's our reality. That is our reality in a classroom. So when I develop a game with children, I will usually have 2 or 3 versions of it. So in the classroom, every child feels like they're playing, for example, I have a number line game called Racetrack Facts and then Racetrack Fractions. But I can differentiate because if I have students at a lower level, I can give them racetrack facts. They're dealing with whole numbers, but those children that are ready to deal with fractions can play the same game. It looks the same. And I'm going to be honest with you. One of the things I do is I run a lot of my games on colored cardstock because of the psychology of that. So here's the big question. Would you rather work on white copy paper or colored cardstock? I mean, seriously, I'll get kids that'll say, Miss Sutton, can you run our games in October on orange? And that's like,
wow.
I know. That's what you're just like amazed at. They think that's a big deal. Now, if I run something in colored cardstock, that means we're going to use it and we're going to reuse it over and over and over again. So if I give a child one version of the game, but I give another child a different version, it's still the same game.
Right, right.
And you can do that if you think about the example I just gave about less than, equal to, greater than. You can do that on a variety of different levels in the classroom, and everybody feels like they're playing the game. So that differentiation is like, it's so critical to me. It has my heart because of the students that I've met in my life that need something different than the rest of the students. And all I'm doing is saying, we all can play games. We all can grow with this.
Okay. You know, there's a question just kind of popped up. I know you addressed it 80 to 90 minutes per day. And I think that's really critical, you know. And I know after one of your first workshop I took and you mentioned something like that, we actually did that. And big difference, you know, but what
a huge difference
for a week. If you were to tell somebody, okay, you know, how much math time per week for 5 days, you know, would a kid need? Would you just take 90 minutes per day and you
yep.
know, multiply so it out?
Yep. It's 400 to 450. And it's really about, again, the critical piece here mm-hmm. is that classroom management, because it's really about thinking about what they need. But that means a teacher is not just going through a book with children. Mm-hmm. You have to know the content that we're required to teach based on the job you have. So sometimes I will bring up at my workshops, oh, this is a fourth grade standard, or this is a second grade piece. Mm-hmm. And I can tell by looking at the audience, they go, really? And I'm thinking to myself, you really have to know the job. Now, you know me. Here's the bottom line. I know how much work that is, but that's what we're signing on.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, I go back to the idea that teaching is an art form. And it really, truly is. The best teachers are always in pursuit of getting better at the job.
Yes, yes.
And I always close my workshops with the question, how many people have learned at least one new thing today? Because that the mindset of a good teacher is there's always more for me to know.
Boy, that is... Yes. A big yes.
You know, I don't think I've ever had anyone agree with me as much as you do.
Well, but you know, I think teachers need to be students of learning.
Absolutely.
Whether you're on the floor for 20 years, 30, yep. I don't care, or 50 yep. years in the classroom, you've got to be continually learning. And this brings me to my final question I have for you. Looking ahead, you know, Kim, at the future trends or innovations, do you foresee the use of math games in elementary education, you know, as we move forward?
I do. I really do. For number one reason, the amount of children I see currently that are lacking coping skills, you have to have the ability to find yourself around others and deal with the realities. And games are really powerful tools for that. Now, if somebody's listening and going, oh, well, then we're going to play more technology games, you're missing the point. It isn't about putting kids on screens. And my heart breaks for elementary when I see that done too much. In fact, a conversation this summer is still reeling in my mind because I was working with a district and the head honcho was talking about, oh, well, we're buying computer program games. And we're just, I said, and I'm too old to be anything less than blunt here. Yeah. So here's what I said, and I probably won't ever be invited. I said, why do you even need teachers then? Because if plugging kids into something was going to fix the problem.
I've always said that.
I know. And it just, it breaks your heart when you think, well, that'll make it easier for the teacher. But the reality is then we have these generations of kids coming up that don't have the ability to lose gracefully or enjoy for just the sake of playing the game. All of that is so much deeper, so much deeper.
Yes. I think, you know, you really need that active engagement. And I don't see how you can get, you know, like you say, sometimes on a computer is fine, but they don't need to spend the bulk of their school day on screens. I've never believed that. And,
because they go home and do it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean? So,
yep.
Oh gosh. Okay, great. Well, Kim, let me ask you this then. If you had to say one thing, I know there's probably many, but what would be the biggest takeaway that you would tell that new teacher, or even a seasoned one for that matter? What would be your biggest takeaway?
Biggest takeaway I can think of, and I thought about this ever since you sent me some suggestions and some conversations that we were going to have. Biggest takeaway is keep this simple. Think about the skills that children need to practice and find a way to do it. I always think about starting my basketball practice with layup drills, and then later in the middle of the practice doing relays where they have to practice layup. Here's the point. Don't overthink this. Don't think you need long, elaborate directions. That's why when any of my games are used, you look at the directions, you'll go, it's not even a half a page of directions. That's because, first of all, a teacher doesn't have time to read long directions, and you want children to want to do something. So we have to think about those skills and make it simple. And if you can get that mindset, then you become the creator of the game. Not me, you become the creator of the game. And I think about inventing Bump It so many years ago. And I think about people that honestly go, oh, that's just a great game. Well, first of all, I invented it with one rule. It now currently has three because students came up with the second and third rule. It was based on the fact that the classroom I inherited had a bunch of bingo boards. And every time I'd pull them out, the kids would go, oh, and I was like, okay, they're not thinking this is fun. And I had to come up with a way to utilize that in a mindset. And I think, don't overthink this. Think about what your goal is from a game. People will go, well, how many different standards? Well, here's the thing. Play it, watch what kids are gaining from it. And then listen to what they have to say when you're in the context of teaching, because they'll share their understanding. And I think that all of that comes out of consistent use of games in the classroom.
Okay. How can folks connect with you, Kim?
Oh, so easy. You're so nice to ask me that. So my website is creativemathematics.com. I have a huge freebies section. In my freebies, I have games. I constantly, when I speak at conferences, I post my handouts electronically. You don't even have to be at the conference to download the handout. Invariably in the handout are going to be games. So I'm always doing that. I also have a YouTube channel, which is Creative Mathematics. And I have really lots of content there. So it's pretty easy. I also answer every email I receive. And my email is kim@creativemathematics.com. And I always love, because of my sleep disorder, I love responding to teachers and sharing ideas, because my favorite thing in the world is teaching.
All righty. And I'll have those links in the podcast description as well. And of course, on the YouTube description box. Kim, I want to thank you so much for taking time out to come on our show again. And I want you back at some point in the future again, because we could probably talk about this for hours. I mean, there's so many different things. You know, but I want to say, before I let you go, though, for my new teachers out there, if you get a chance, if you ever get the opportunity to go to one of Kim Sutton's mathematic workshop, you need to do it. Okay. Because you'll go back to your classroom so fired up. It'll be astounding. So go ahead and take advantage of that.
Thank you, Steve.
All right. Again, Kim, thanks a lot. And we'll talk to you soon. Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Bye-bye,
Kim. Loved it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, we have come to the end of today's episode. Thanks for listening to the Teacher Rockstar Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Hiles. We hope you got some golden nuggets regarding the science of playing math games for practice in the elementary classroom. And don't forget to subscribe to us at the Teacher Rockstar Podcast. And if you'd like to support us, please feel free to share our podcast with others, post about it on social media, and leave a rating and review. That would be greatly appreciated, as always. Thanks again, and we'll see you same time, same place next week. And remember, my friend, you got this.
You've been listening to the Teacher Rockstar Podcast with your host, Steve Hiles. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast as much as we have. Make sure to hit that subscribe button and join our ever-growing community of Teacher Rockstars. Until then, thanks for listening.